Hi, everybody. Welcome. My name is Robert. I'm a compulsive eater and bulimic.
Hi, Robert.
Hi. Welcome. We are doing today the Back to the Basics, sponsored by the book workshop. It is taking our Forever Abstinent book and just going through it and revisiting. This is our Bible, and this is what keeps us abstinent. So thank you for coming. I want the panel to introduce themselves, and here we go. Here's...
Hi, I'm Gabby, and I am a compulsive eater. Hi, everybody, and I'm delighted to be here today. Thank you.
And my name is David. I'm a compulsive eater and sugar addict. And hi, David, participating in this panel.
So let's get started. I just wanted to, you know, this workshop was important to me because this, when I sponsor, my sponsees always had questions, and I always would say, well, did you look at your Forever Abstinent book? And also the sponsor's guidelines is a huge resource too. So we have to remember these two books are our program and have so much information. So these are what keep us abstinent and fitting into the same clothes year after year and sane. For me, this is sanity. So let me start off by saying I think we should read someone, if someone would volunteer to read the See How concept, I can, if you have your Forever Abstinent book, that would be great.
Hi, Barbara, compulsive eater. The CEA How concept, the Compulsive Eaters Anonymous How concept, has been formed to offer the compulsive eater who accepts the 12 steps and 12 traditions as a program of recovery, a disciplined and structured approach. The See How groups have been formed in the belief that our disease is absolute, and therefore only absolute acceptance of the See How concept will offer any sustained abstinence to critical level. Therefore, the See How plan of eating, steps, traditions, and tools of recovery are not suggested. Rather, we accept them as requirements for our recovery. Meetings are dedicated to the concept of remaining honest, open-minded, and willing to listen. This is the HOW of the program. We pray that the collective group conscience and love that these ideals offer us will promote a strong sense of security that will enable us to experience a new unity and a wholeness with all those around us, and that the See How ideal will help us to progress in our program of recovery on a daily basis. To be certain, much of our strength is found in the structure of meetings and in the daily adherence to the program as it is written in our literature. Each group also firmly understands that after our recovery has begun through abstinence and the taking of the first three steps, our further surrender to the additional steps of recovery offers us a promise of happiness, contentment, and achievement in all areas of our lives. We ensure our continued and sustained abstinence from compulsive eating by being forever aware that God is doing for us what we have never been able to do for ourselves. May God, as each of us understands Him, open our minds and our hearts to the love which is manifest in this room. Amen.
Hi, I'm Polly, a compulsive overeater. Hi. The 12 steps of recovery. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these character defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive eaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
I just wanted to do a little qualification. I'm Robert. I'm compulsive eater and bulimic. Hello. I have been in program for a little over 5 years. I have slipped a few times. I have two, but I never left. I think I knew when I came into program over 5 years ago that I was never going to leave. I think after the first week, I was like, I don't like being here, but I can't leave here, is what I was thinking. I was at my rock bottom for sure. I had tried it on my own since I was 15, and when I was 40, I entered program, and I think those amount of years was enough to do it alone. So I have 2 years and I don't have my book with me, and going almost 3 years of abstinence, and it has been amazing. My life is much bigger. When I started program, before I started program, I led a life of gaining 50 pounds, dropping 50 pounds, gaining 50 pounds, and dropping 50 pounds from easily into my, from late teens to 40. And it was such a toll on my body and my mind and my sanity. And it has been 5 years of being a little more sane and a little nicer to people and friends. I find that the food is not the celebration for me. It is my experiences and my relationships with my friends and my family and other people and listening more. So I am grateful for that. And so that is why I felt that this workshop was important. My sponsor and I always talk about how this Forever Abstinent book is so important to our recovery, and doing it by the book, as closely to the book as we can. I know it's hard, we're human, things happen, but this book has been written for a reason and tested for a reason, and it works. It has worked for me, and I hope it's working for you. So what I want to do is I'm going to just start reading certain things that I highlighted in this book. And, you know, the beginning of this book gives us a little bit of a history of how See How formed, and I would recommend, if we haven't read this book again, you should all take your Forever Abstinence books and read them again. I think Gabby read it again from start to finish. It's a good book, and what happens is no one dies at the end. It's really great. Actually, you actually live at the end. Oh, and there is no end, by the way. I'm sorry. There were a few things I highlighted. Seeing things more clearly on page one where it starts. It is encouraging that many professionals today believe food addiction is an illness. That one sentence kind of summed it up. When I walked into program, the first day I walked in, I think one of the biggest things for me is that I found a home and a name to what I was. I had struggled so many years and just thought I was such a loser for not being able to control my weight. What a, you know, loser. For years and years, I just struggled and struggled. And as you get older, you just start beating yourself up more and more. You get less and less willpower, and you just, I was hating myself more for not being able to do the diets I used to be able to do and lose the damn weight that I used to be able to lose. And it was so nice to get into program and realize, I'm sick. I have an illness. There's nothing wrong with it. And I'm crazy. And I'm in a room full of crazy, great people. and we all are helping each other. The other thing on that first page that I highlighted was, but for the food addiction, this was huge for me as well. And there's so many of these in this first part. But for the food addicted or the compulsive eater, the solution becomes more elusive. This booklet addresses the age-old question, can you have your cake and eat it too? Our answer is resoundingly no. And it is the truth that an alcoholic and a drug addict don't have to be with alcohol and drugs every day. They don't have to face it. But our drug is food. We have to eat, and we have to face it three times a day. And that portion was huge to me, because it's true. I have to face, after five and a half some odd years, it is so nice in between meals, but when I face a meal, I'm still one bite away. I am still there. It is so strange how that craziness in that one meal, in those three meals, I face it every three meals after five and a half years. And it's a little easier, but it's still there. And that always is really interesting to me. So there's so many great things in these readings on these pages. The next thing I highlighted was, and when you read through this, I think it'll bring these things back to all of you as well. Another carbohydrate addict's revolution occurred in 1979 when the HAL concept was born in Phoenix, Arizona. The face of food addiction and 12-step approach to intervening with food abuse has never been the same. The honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, the HOW concept, holds that addiction to refined carbohydrates is at the core of binge eating. Food high in sugar and flour are what most of us turn to when we overeat. However, in a pinch, a large quantity of anything, even greens, beans, or broccoli, can also be a candidate for a binge. And when I read that, it brought back to, for me, and I know a lot of you are flour and sugar addicts, but for me, I don't care about flour and sugar. I care about a huge mound of food in front of me. That is how I've always been. I am a quantity eater. I don't care what it is. I could gain weight on a salad bar. I would eat the whole salad bar. That's all I care about, is being able to go back for more and having more. That was my life. So that was a revelation, too. When you read this stuff, it's like, wow, yeah. Binging is my world. Flour and sugar, not so much. I also highlighted with the formation of Compulsive Eaters Anonymous, how incorporated the idea conceived by Father Daly in the early 1960s reached fruition in a program based on a spiritual leap preceded by abstinence from the addictive substance. See how opens wide its arms to welcome those who suffer this addiction. And in this booklet, we hope to lay out and explain why we do what we do, and why some of it is strictly from experience and some of it follows a logic that comes from those of us who have tried over and over again to get abstinent and recover. I'm just thankful for the work people did before for me to have this program. It has been a life-changing thing, and this book, these two books, have changed my life in this 5.5 years. I am a different person than I was 5.5 years ago. I have a richer life. I do want to... The next section I'm going to go over is ready, set, go in this. These are all the things we have to do when we start this program. And this is very important for us when we start this program. So if you're sponsoring someone or have a new sponsee, these pages are really important for you to read and understand if you haven't already. See your doctor. When I started my program, I knew that they had recommended having a doctor's approval. And I think that is extremely important. Move this in. And when I showed my doctor the program, he was all in. He was excited about the program because he thought it was a balanced program for me. So it says here to definitely have your doctor's approval. And I didn't realize that. Take a sugar-free multivitamin daily. So I think I'm going to have to start doing that. I did not do that. So there is a section that they tell you, too, on this booklet to have signed by your doctor on page 7. And I had him just fill out sign a sheet stating that he's fine with the program. And this is how crazy I was. When I went to my doctor and had him do this, just being new in the program, I had friends that loved drinking wine, and I would partake. I don't drink a lot at all. But I had my doctor sign, write a note saying I could have wine. So that's how crazy I was. I was like, I can't give up wine. It's too social and fun. Even though I didn't like it and it would give me headaches. But it was just, it's like smoking. When I was smoking, I didn't love it, but it was social. So drinking wine and smoking was my life. Right? So I've given all that up, which is pretty great, but that's how crazy I am. I got a note for all of that. By the way, you can't get a note for drinking wine. I didn't realize that, right?
No.
All right. Yeah, who's that? I'm going to speed up because I only have 20 minutes here, and I think I'm going too slow. Do not try to do this alone. The next highlighted thing, it's so true. Like I stated in the beginning, I did this alone for so many years, and it didn't work. So this is why I know that I was just having a conversation about slipping and people that leave completely. I was like, even though I've slept in the past, and And even though I did, I knew that I couldn't leave. The idea of not having these meetings was insane to me because I'm insane. So you guys are my sanity. So doing it alone is not the way. So if you have a sponsee or, thinking they can leave and do it alone, I don't know. It's tough. Doing it alone is not the way. So definitely get a sponsor. Anyone you see in the rooms that is new, definitely approach them and talk to them because it's important. If I would have left my first meeting, I might not have come back. It's strange. I think about that. I was really, really fortunate. I had someone take me up really quick. We weigh and measure our food. Use a postal scale, a kitchen scale, or a digital scale. Measuring cups and measuring spoons, that's how we do it. I know when I measure, there is weight lifted off of me. It's very strange. It is because when I go to restaurants, there's always that question. I think I need a little more vegetables when I get home. You go a little nuts. You don't know if you're eating the right amount, but when you measure and weigh your food, there is that relief and happiness that happens. I saw nodding heads, so I know you know what I mean. There is something, you don't want to do it. I didn't want to do it in the beginning, but when I do it, it is the most relieving thing. So, yes, weighing and measuring your food. Be prepared. Being prepared is huge. So if you're traveling, call ahead to restaurants. I have the restaurants that I normally go to, so I know that they have my food and my portions. So, but yes, parties. I bring food to my friends' parties. I bring my Tupperware of food, and they know it. And if they want to cook for me, they know how to cook for me. There's one friend that invites me and knows that if she makes the regular amount of vegetables, she won't have vegetables for her friends. Because I told her, I don't cut my vegetables. I weigh them. So you that platter of vegetables, that's my dinner. it's amazing the amount of food we get to eat. But be prepared is a huge thing. I do bring my food. You know, in the beginning it was tough. Tell your sponsees, bring your food. There's nothing wrong with it. Do not skip meals and combine meals. Sit down for meals. Avoid second helpings. Be aware of your feelings as you consume food. I don't know if I really thought about that. I'm going to have to start being more aware of what I'm thinking. I usually am just eating. Let's see. Oh. I get that in another. I have 86 food out of my world. I don't know why I wrote that there. Anyway. Weigh yourself monthly. Huge. But never more often until you reach your maintenance weight. Before program, I weighed myself almost every day, and not just once a day. It was insane. The amount, I thought that within hours I would lose a lot of weight. How crazy am I? Wine and the scale. I was probably on the scale drinking wine. Food may be baked, boiled, roasted, pan-broiled, grilled, or oven-broiled. When eating out, sauteed, you know, all the things you can get, sauteed, whatever, is probably going to have too much oil for you, so stay away from those things. These are just sections that you should really point out to your sponsees and read yourself again, because a lot of this stuff, I was getting that stuff when I was eating out. And then I have to, you know, rereading this is a huge, great thing, because it does pull out things that we may have forgotten. Read labels. Yeah, When I started, it was hours in a grocery store, but it was worth it. Now I know what to get. Now I know what to grab. It's worth that. So with your sponsees, definitely reiterate that, because they would just grab things that they thought were abstinent. And I said, you read that label. You know that has sugar in it. It has to. If you are unsure about anything, leave it alone. Call your sponsor or ask others in the program and then make a decision. But do not depend on others to maintain your abstinence. That's huge. Don't leave it up to your friends. They don't know your abstinence. Don't leave it up to chefs in restaurants. You must empower yourself. When in doubt, leave it out. That's huge. When in doubt, just leave it out. You can live without it. Every day, write down your meals and plans. Your meal plan. That's huge. I've had sponsees that don't want to write it, and you know when they're not writing it, because when they're pulling it out of the air over the phone, it's like, okay, really? I do not do that, Pamela. I may sound like I'm pulling it out of the air when I talk to you, because I'm very conversational when I talk. But no, I think writing it down is a huge, huge thing. For me, it's huge because I don't know what it is, but when I hit 35, 40, my memory, crazy, I can't remember anything. So writing it down for me is a huge thing because I have a reference to go back to. Now there's a section here in medical abstinence. I don't sponsor medical abstinence because I'm not medical abstinence, and it's another world of its own, and I don't understand that world, so that's why I don't. There are medical abstinence sponsors in this program. I need to speed up, sorry. So there is a section in there for that. Okay. Let me get to this too, because, okay, I have a page left. Exercise. Exercise in your program. They talk about exercise in the program. For me, I went 3 years in this program, and I lost all the weight. But there was definitely something missing for me. And after 3 years, I started implementing an exercise regimen. I felt so much better. There is something about when you put that into your program that is huge. Because our program, I'll read this, although exercise is not a must in CHOW, the three levels of recovery from food addiction are spiritual, emotional, and physical. And the physical part of it is an amazing thing. There is something amazing to have some sort of exercise program in your life. a meditation. That's somewhere where I need to work on. Right, David? David is a meditator. He's a yogi. He's my yogi. The value of quiet time and meditation has long been known to quiet the hungry heart and the starving soul. I will say this, when I have done the meditation meetings, there is something pretty amazing in those meetings. That quiet time, you know, there's a lot of stuff because I'm not used to it going on in this head, but that quiet time really does, there is something amazing about meditation and being quiet and not allowing yourself to think, boy, that's a tough one. I have final notes here. A final note. Be aware that as of this moment, no one has succeeded in staying abstinent long-term without the use and acceptance of the 12 steps of recovery. Originally created by alcoholics, the 12 steps are the most successful intervention known to us today for addicts of all kinds. To stay abstinent, we suggest you begin working the steps immediately. We reprint them in Appendix C as modified for compulsive eaters. The See How Food Plan Disclaimer. I did want to read this for some reason. I had marked this all because I thought it was really great. This suggested menu outline has been developed by compulsive eaters over the years. It is a guide to achieve physical recovery from compulsive eating. It is offered as a recommendation in working the first step, admitting we were powerless over food on a daily basis. Only a See How sponsor can explain the food plan to a newcomer, any sponsor will help you work through it. It is to be used only with the approval of a physician. No one should adopt any program of eating without direction from their doctor. Modifications made by a physician or medical intervention made by someone who understands the addictive nature of a disease is acceptable if it falls within the parameters of being sugar and flour free and a weighed and measured program. If modifications are made, they must be in writing, discussed with a sponsor, and followed as directed. Upon approval of the modifications, use the modified food plan daily with a sponsor as you follow the 12 steps of recovery. No modifications will be accepted without a physician's signature. I just really loved reading that. So, thank you for my section. I am now going to pass it over to Gabby. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Gabby, and I'm a compulsive eater. I feel like Comic-Con up here. Like, I should definitely be like, oh, in my new show today. Can you all hear me? Okay. I'm going to try to talk slow. It's very hard for me because although I live in Bakersfield now, I'm a New Yorker by birth. So my job is to talk about Section 2. And Section 2 has two components to it. One is the letter from the World Service Office, the WSO, to every potential member of See How, or active member of See How. And the other part is the first 30-day food plan. So everybody wants me to talk about the first 30-day food plan, right? Because that has the food part of it. But I want to stop for a second and focus on the letter. Because this is what happened. Robert called me. He said, you know, your name came up. Would you be willing to lead this workshop? And I said, or to be part of this panel. I said, oh, I would love to. I'm so honored. That's wonderful for a Rhapsody. Yes, but what a great topic for a workshop. I hung up the phone and called Chris, the intergroup literature person for my intergroup, and said, I just agreed to lead a meeting on this. Send me one now, please. And I sat, it's like it came in the mail, and I thought, oh, thank God for Chris. You know, and I sat there, and I read the whole thing, and the whole time I'm like, look at this, look at this, what is, wow. So, you know, why hadn't I read it in so many years? Oh, because I know. I know what's on the food plan. You want to know? I know the food that's on the food plan. That I know absolutely. You want to know what else? I don't really know what the food is on the food plan because I followed the food plan from 1997. So about, you know, when we still had half cup this and, you know, whatever. So I was reading it, you know, and I was like, you know, this is so deep and amazing. And I want to tell you what part of it is so deep and amazing and incredible. Let me introduce myself. I'm Gabby. I'm a compulsive eater. And by the grace of God and through really only willingness and honesty and open-mindedness on my part, but by the grace of God, I have 15 years, 9 months, and 20, what day is today? 27? 29 days of abstinence. So God, you know, God has blessed me with this wonderful continuous abstinence. So I'm here to talk about what you can do in program. Ready? If you have a young child, and that young child is afraid of some monster in the closet, under the bed, or whatever, there are a lot of different ways you can approach that, right? You can say, oh, darling, I'm always here for you. You can turn on the lights and say, there is no monster under the bed. Go to sleep right now. You can give them a flashlight. You can do all these things. But the bottom line is there's no monster under the bed. In my virtually 16 years in this program, I have yet to hear of someone dying of starvation or malnutrition. Certainly not during the first 30 days. Honestly, I know we're a program of anonymity, but seriously, if someone had died from malnutrition and starvation, that rumor would have made it around. We would have heard about it. So the monster under the bed is that you're going to starve to death in the first 30 days. You know, you get people in this program who say, that is not nearly enough food. And they go to their doctor and they say, this is not nearly enough food. I've been to a lot of doctors in 16 years. I mean, I've been a general practitioner, gynecologist, you name it, pediatricians, because I'm a woman now, so I don't have a doctor of my own. I go to my children's doctor when I have an issue. And in that amount of time, I have never, not even once, had a doctor say to me, wow, this is starvation level. You better eat more. Not even once. I've also noticed that doctors will, in fact, sign off on virtually anything you tell them to, as evidenced by Robert. And so, the best advice I ever got from my doctor was when I was pregnant with my first child, and he said, all right, come back in a month. I did make some modifications. I was on a medical abstinence. But the doctor said, great. I said, don't you think that's not enough? He said, I don't know. Come back in a month, and we'll weigh you. And then I'll let you know. Want to know something? It was enough for 3 kids, 3 years, nursing. Didn't starve to death. So my point is the monster under the bed here is the fear of starvation. It is a real fear, just like it is really a fear for children that the monster under their bed is going to eat them. And no matter how much you tell them that it's really the bathrobe that, you know, when they were supposed to put away after bath, didn't you tell them that already? It's not real. I have known people in these rooms with every kind of job imaginable, from rabbi to stripper, from people who weighed 400 pounds to people who were attempting to put on weight because they were anorexic and they needed to gain weight in this program. That's why I like when they say, what is your weight change when you qualify, rather than how much weight did you lose? Because remember, we're all here. This is compulsive eaters, not fat people, you know. My point, I've had people work this program with lupus, with diabetes, with MS. I've had people work this program who are long-distance runners and bikers. I've had people work this program who are getting married, getting divorced, going through death, going through birth. You name the transition, we have somebody in this program who's done it before you and done it abstinently. And no one has ever needed to alter this food plan. So my first and foremost thing is the boogeyman in the closet isn't real. You're not gonna die on this program. In fact, my experience was when I got into this program, I was frantically exercising and barely eating anything. I still weighed almost 200 pounds and I was miserable, and so when they said, oh, go home and eat dinner, I said, but it's almost 9 p.m. And she said, I don't know, have you eaten dinner yet? And I said, no. And she said, okay, well, go home and eat dinner. I thought this was the best program I had ever heard of in my entire life. It was only after, you know, she folded the tripartite food plan backwards so you could only see what you could eat, and that she hid all the parts that, you know, what you couldn't eat in this program. I didn't find that out till later. My point is, try it. Try it as it's written. It says very clearly on page 11 of the Forever Abstinent book, which I just learned how to read, that we are concerned that when we talk about the food, we're reinforcing the obsession with food rather than assisting you in your recovery. So the number one thing is, when you have a question about food, don't write World Service. You don't think they have enough to do? It's like writing the President of the United States when you have a question about, like, your sidewalk gutter. Like, really? You know, there's other things on his plate. He doesn't need your little miniature question. So that's why you have a sponsor. The first reason you have a sponsor is so that you can ask. And this comes up all the time. Actually, one of my first sponsees ever committed 4 ounces of shellfish. I was brought up in a Jewish home. Did not know how much shellfish one got to eat because I wasn't 100% sure what category it fell into. So I went back to my book, and it, lo and behold, on the proteins list, there it was, 4 ounces. I thought, isn't that good? Yes, you can eat that. So, you know, the answers are in this book, and if they're not, you know, I asked my Catholic sponsor for confirmation. Was that, in fact, you know, was that okay to eat 4 ounces of shellfish? She said, yes. Why? I don't know. Not me. You can bucket up the food chain to a point. To a point. You can start at your sponsor. If you don't know, you know, to this day, I'm not 100% sure what finger foods are. So by the way, when in doubt, leave it out. So I don't eat them because I don't know what they are. I understand that some people utilize that concept, but I'm not sure. I don't know how to do that. So I don't. But once your sponsor gives you an answer or says, I'm going to check with my sponsor, I'll get back to you tomorrow, leave it alone. There's something in this book that they really stress. It's called the spirit of abstinence. The spirit of abstinence. The spirit of abstinence means if you're focused on it, it's probably not abstinent for you. For you. Does that mean it's not okay for everybody? I don't care. I'm not sponsoring everybody. I'm looking at you, and I'm helping you get out of the food and into recovery. So my first thought as a sponsee, as a sponsor, as somebody who's new to program, any of these categories, is do the food plan as it's written. Try it for a week. I had somebody I sponsored years ago who was over 400 pounds, and she said, this is not a sustainable amount of food for me. I said, I hear you. I absolutely hear you. I know it's really scary. Can you try it for a week? Because I guarantee you, you're not going to starve to death in a week, in 1 week. And after a week, I said, you know what? We'll talk about it again in the week. In the meantime, could you do it as written for 1 week? My first experience, I just said, you know what, I'm going to do it for 30 days. Because I see that it's healthy, you know. How many things have I tried, by the way, that are not healthy? Let's go to that part. You know, oh, injectables, random pills that you're giving out in your living room, I don't even know you. I would love to take that. I went into to a vitamin store a while ago, and, you know, this guy said, oh, these pills are like magic. My girlfriend eats them because they take off weight like I can't even tell you. The still not done with me part of my diseased brain that's there was like, wow, look at that. You pop some of these suckers and all that extra skin, weight, water, God only knows what else comes off. I said, you know, I'm going to have to check that with my 12-step sponsor. I'm not going to purchase them. I know you're offering this lovely deal. Buy two, get three free, whatever it is. I'm not going to do that. I came home. I said, what is this magic pills that you just randomly lose weight? They said, yeah, it's a dehydrator. You can die. Oh, me proud of my brain. Oh, you can die? That's okay. But, you know, does it get rid of that extra water weight? Do I look better at the end of it? You know what? This is where we are. This is where we are. I am at a point in my life where I try to do things as written. Do I fight them? Yes, because I don't know, because that's just me. Am I human? Am I, yes, am I, you know, is my brain? Yes. Does it matter that I've been in recovery this long? A little bit. A little bit. You know, I used to say you get 1 second of thought process time for every year that you're abstinent. So I have about a quarter of a minute to decide if something is really working for me or not. That took a long time, you know. And they also say you are the age that you are when you start eating compulsively plus however many years of abstinence you've accrued. So I realized I was always in, like, had weird behaviors around food, but the first time I really acted on them, I was just about 14. So I am now 29 in abstinent life. I like that age. You know, sounds good to me. I'm 29 years old mentally, so it's, you know, I'm at a time where it's, like, not as peculiar for me to feel like an adult. You know, when I started program, I was 20, what, it was in 1997, so I had just turned 26, and I was really mentally 14 years old. So I did a lot of inappropriate flirting and a lot of, like, you know, I don't know how to ask for what I need, you know, because I'm going someplace and, you know, everything else. But you know what? I did it. Because you know what? Nobody thought it was weird but me. I will say two more things and then I will pass it over to David. But the first thing is that I am, one of my very first experiences, I was invited over to somebody's house for a Jewish holiday. I told my sponsor that the custom was to do something that is, by the way, completely not abstinent. She said, I would prefer that you didn't. If you remember, I said she was Catholic. I spent the entire day going like, well, she doesn't know. She doesn't have any idea. And then I kept thinking, well, why? Why am I wanting to do this? Why am I wanting to eat this food? And I thought, well, because, you know, it's tradition. And I thought, yes, yeah, a lot of traditions. You following them all? Yeah, no. It's because I'll get in trouble if I don't. I thought, you know, there's a lot of other things you could start to do in your religion that are not eating. Why don't you start with some of those? You can get back to the eating ones later. Then I thought, they'll think I'm crazy. No. You show up in your 20s and you're 70 pounds overweight and you say, I'm trying to eat a little bit more healthy, nobody looks at you funny. Turns out they don't look at you funny, by the way, when you're 42 and you show up and you tell them, and you're thin and you look like you're trying to eat healthy. Nobody says, oh no, you know, you can't do that. Turned out that, by the way, I was sitting there saying, I'm sorry, I don't eat flour and sugar, and the two other people that they had invited were vegan. So guess what? I was not weird. Because everybody just sort of ate what they ate, because you know what? It wasn't about the food. As Robert said, it was about being there for the companionship and the company. The last thing I want to talk about is the meal plan as we eat it on page 14. This is the first 30-day plan. You look at the breakfast. You know, this is how my sponsor started me. She pointed to dinner. She said, for dinner, you get one protein selection and three vegetable selections. And if you need up to 2 tablespoons of dressing, you get 2 tablespoons of dressing. But make sure you read the labels. And I, again, like Robert said, labels? Meat. Meat has sugar in it. Like, a lot of meat. Like, who would have put sugar in their meat? Oh, everybody. Turns out that, like, every processed company on the planet is like, oh, we think sugar would be a great addition to this. Really? I mean, I couldn't even imagine it, but there I was reading labels. What? And, you know, like you said, I mean, one of the best gifts I ever got was somebody took me to a grocery store who was abstinent and said, you can get this, 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 but not that, that, that. Made shopping a lot easier. By now, I shop at Costco. I know what everything is. You know, my husband will come home. This is abstinent. I bought it. Okay, so I looked at that dinner, and I turned to the protein list, and I looked at, this is actually the funniest thing. I got an outreach call about a day after I read this booklet. And somebody asked me about something, and I was like, oh, it's at the bottom right-hand corner of the list. As if, you know, I was like one of those big book thumpers. Like, oh, yeah, it's on page 714. And I was like, yeah, no. I have no idea what I'm talking about. But I just, you know, if it says one protein, you know, and you can mix and match, whatever it is, but stay on this list. And if it's too complicated, stay off. If you don't know whether it's fat-free or not fat-free, so it's 2 or 4 or 8 ounces of tofu, stop. Stop. Let's eat something easy. Let's go easy. Because simplicity, you know, simplicity goes back to that fear of it not being enough. It goes back to that boogeyman, that monster under the bed. The fear is if you walk out with the simplest meal that you can, let's say you're going somewhere, and you walk out with just a very simple packaged meal, that everybody else will get complicated meals that will be much more exciting and better and happier than your meal. And that's always a reminder that you don't have that. I'll finish it up by saying somebody said to me the other day that she wanted to go abroad to a country where she heard they had this particular kind of food. And she didn't want to go because she was afraid that she was going to go there and eat that food when she got there. I said, you know, we have this magical thing called an internet. You could get on the internet right now and order that food. Why wait? If you're going to break your abstinence, you can do it. And once you take that mystery and that magic out of this, it's a wedding. It's my wedding. It's going to be, you know, I have to eat this because this is the only time in my life that I am ever going to fill in the blank. Have access to this something. You want it. There's nothing in the world that's once in a lifetime. We are no longer in 1743 Vienna. You don't need to say, wow, you know, Marco Polo has just returned and I will never get to taste this ever again in my entire life. It's the amazing thing about technology, but once you take that mystery away, it becomes much less appealing. You know, once I know that, you know, if I want, you know, a particular item that comes with a particular celebration, I could go order one for myself now. Oh, but I don't want that. I want the drama of having it in that place at that time with that celebratory feeling, in which case, that's wonderful. Go have that feeling and that celebration, but food is fuel. When I drove here from Bakersfield, California this morning, I did not put different fuel in my car than I did when I drove to work, which is only a 2-mile drive instead of a 120-mile drive. Because my car doesn't remember what kind of fuel I put in it. It just goes to here. And that's the same thing. You know, if you are focused on the nitty-gritty of the food because something is calling you, oh, but I like that. I like to do this with my food. I just remind you of the phrase, the spirit of abstinence. Spirit of abstinence isn't deprivation. Do you think we'd all be here if it was all deprivation? It's like 250, 300 and something people at this conference. We're all like, oh, we love deprivation. You know, no. We love laughter. We love fun. We love friendship. We love socialization. That whole idea, we've just learned how to disconnect it from something that's in our mouths. You know, you don't socialize, you know, by showing everybody your canines. It's not like that's an integral part of socialization. So I'm so grateful to be here. I'm very grateful to Robert for asking me to reread this book because I was like, well, there's a lot of good stuff in here. But you know what? There was a lot of good stuff in there, and it's so wonderfully funny. I barely focused on any of the lists of acceptable foods or the amounts because those are, in some ways, the least important parts of this book. Because once you learn this, I mean, I can tell you what they are, but those in the U.S. government. And, you know, anytime the U.S. government actually gets it right, you know it's pretty basic. So you take this idea, you take a look at it, you pick what you're going to have for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You write it down along with your question. You call it in and commit it. My sponsor is actually sitting in this room. Fascinating story. I started to be sponsored by her almost 6 years ago. It's the first time I've ever met her in person because she says she is lives many, many thousands of miles away from me. But that's an amazing, wonderful thing. And you know what? What I tell her I'm going to eat is the least interesting part and the shortest part of our conversation every single morning. It goes like this. Okay, and now I want to talk to you about my husband. So that is, you know, that's where we are today. I am delighted to talk to people because when you're brand new, this concept of like, you know, two eggs, one egg, and half an egg, you know, it is a little overwhelming, which is why you have to look at the lists for at least the first 30 days. And then I'm going to turn it over, and we're going to talk about after the first 30 days. Because that takes a little getting used to, just like maintenance. There's another workshop on maintenance. It takes a little getting used to. And then it stops taking used to getting used to. Then you're done with that. And now you can focus on less. Thank you very much for letting me share.
I've been assigned these pages 20, 21, and 22, which is the CL food plan after 30 days. So how basic can we get? Well, first of all, I always like to, I've started doing this every time I share in a panel or a meeting or whatever, I always acknowledge my higher power. Because my higher power is truly doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. You know, I tried many, many years. I was 56 before I got to this program, and I've been absent now 13 years. So I'll be, in August, I'll be 70 years old. So I always acknowledge my higher power. Basically, there's higher power. What comes after that? Then comes my program. After that, fellowship. After that, my sponsor. And then of course, we have the prospects, those people that are sort of interested in what you're doing, but don't know if they really want to do what you're doing. So, the See How Food Plan After 30 Days. So, it says here, the food plan we have outlined for the first 30 days is the one that resembles the original idea that Father Dowling had in mind. It's very interesting to read about Father Dowling. You know, there's a lot more than just as what appears in our literature. So it had no fruit, high fructose fruits, grains, or starches. The most interesting line in this paragraph for me is, no one has ever failed to lose weight using this plan. Now, that's a pretty bold statement, and I have heard people share that they have gained weight on the second 30 days. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what they've said. In my experience, that's not true, because when I was on the first 30 days, I lost 25 pounds. I mean, the first month, and the first 30 days, the first month, I lost 25 pounds. The second month, I lost 11 pounds. And the third month, I lost 9 pounds, and so I went from being on the edge of being morbidly obese to being at maintenance weight. So this program worked, but I can remember those first 30 days as being very difficult. And one of my favorite stories, my sponsor repeats it too, is riding my bicycle up Latuna Canyon. Some of you from this area know where Latuna Canyon is. And shouting up to him, I need some grain, because I'm so hungry. And so, but then I couldn't use that sponsor anymore after 30 days, or after 3 months, because I had lost all my weight. Now I was at maintenance, and he's only 3 months ahead of me, and so he wasn't, I hadn't done all of his writing. So we were looking around, and Ray Z was the only one that volunteered to be my maintenance sponsor. And someone was sharing last night about feeling so hungry and everything, and if I said to Ray, I'm so hungry, Ray, I have to get home from work, and I'm so hungry, she said, have a glass of ice water and go to bed. That was Ray, you know, so... But then after those first 3 months, I lost, kept losing more weight. And now, of course, I was riding my bicycle. I believe that compulsive exercise or compulsive exercising is a component of compulsive eating. At least it was for me. And nobody said you have to give up your bike riding. Nobody said you had to stop going to the gym. But I learned as time went along that I had to give up some of it, you know, so instead of riding 100 to 200 miles a week to keep my weight down, now I do maybe a 120 to 25 mile bike ride a week, and maybe I'll take a spinning class or something like that, but nobody has to do that. That's what I chose to do. So what is the difference between the food plan after 30 days and the food plan at 30 days? It's just adding some grain. That's basically what it is, from what I can see here. And grains and starches are added only twice a day. They must be weighed and measured, and they must be flour-free. Now, one of the things I hear all the time in my program, in people sharing, is I hear people talking about, I abstain from sugar and white flour. The truth of the matter is we abstain from all flours, and we abstain from whole wheat flour. We abstain from all flours. And I remember Ray saying to me, if it says flour, we can't have it. If it doesn't say flour, we can have it, as long as, fifth or lower. There's lots of starches. There's like tapioca starch. There's all kinds of corn starch, all kinds of different starches that are, in fact, flour. And someone asked me early on in the program, why must we abstain from flour? And I looked it up on the Internet, and it turns out there's an enzyme in the saliva that turns that flour, because it's such fine little particles, it turns it into, processes it as sugar. And that's, there's a lot of stuff on the Internet, if you really research it, to find out, what foods do what for you and what don't. I think it's very interesting that Robert mentioned early on that it said that we were to take a multivitamin, sugar-free, yes, absolutely sugar-free. And, you can read the label. And I, being a vegetarian, I also get something that is sugar-free, flour-free, gluten-free. There are all those things, and also, because I'm also a yogi, I also leave out gelatin, because gelatin is made from stuff we don't want to know about. So I always applaud the courage, of people that come into these rooms. It takes a lot to come to these rooms. Like I say, it took me 56 years to get to this room. I tried all different diets. The first time that I really started gaining weight was when I left college and when I left home to go to college. And I started eating the way I wanted to eat rather than the way my mother cooked for me. And she was one of the first kind of nutritionists. She basically... We had fresh fruits and vegetables from the garden, not from the store, from the garden, and we all had to work in the garden, so we knew what it took to raise a green bean or a cob of corn or a tomato or whatever. So I learned about proper diet. It was when I decided I was going to have what I wanted, when I wanted, however much I wanted, that I started to get into trouble. So for many, many years, I kept off the weight by compulsively exercising. And up until 40, 45, it wasn't that much of a problem. You just ran 3 or 4 miles a day, plus you did some biking, plus you went to a high aerobics or low-impact aerobics class or a hip-hop aerobics class or a step aerobics class, and sometimes all in one day. And then go out and run for an hour and a half. But after that while, that didn't work anymore. So that's why this food plan is so valuable. It says you don't have to exercise. But I'll tell you, I've missed the beta endorphins if I didn't exercise. And you only have to experience it on a regular basis for you to miss it. So that's a drug, something in our food that's excited by our food if we exercise. There are certain people that have celiac disease, have gluten intolerance, and there's also some people who are hypoglycemic. The thing that has been emphasized by the other two participants here is the fact that we check with our sponsor, and then the sponsor, if they don't know, check with their sponsor. And one of the things that Ray always told me, too, is if I had a question, I would call her up. She says, that's between that person and their sponsor. It's not, you don't have to solve that for anybody else. There are people who do have experience, we share our experience. The small scale is an indication of what's going to happen on the larger scale. So if you're not weighing and measuring, or if I'm not weighing and measuring, it's going to show up on the big scale. And that's why we have a consistency of approach in our program. of gradual, it says gradual long-term recovery. Recovering compulsive eaters who begin adding grains or starches to their food plan are often unaware of the changes going on in their body. I've had people share with me a lot of times, you know, the scale's not moving, you know, I'm just not losing any more weight, you know. And what I've discovered is that there were times in my weight loss, or, you know, when my weight is coming down, that I reach a plateau. And it may last there for 3 or 4 months. I've also noticed that the women that I'm sponsoring, sometimes the weight comes up a lot more slowly than it does for men. But you can't get discouraged, you know. It's a gradual, it says gradual long-term recovery. And there's a time when long-term abstinence must be fine-tuned. Recovery, listening to your body and becoming aware of your thought processes before, during, and after meals. So we become mindful with our proper diet. How many people are on maintenance here? Quite a few. And here we are in a basic food workshop. Interesting. I think that's really interesting. You know, one of the things that I discovered myself in meditation and conferring with my sponsor and listening to people in meetings is that I believe that God has the right idea of what size I'm supposed to be. And when I'm in tune with my higher power, when I'm, you know, when I have a sense of who I am. Now, I weigh exactly what I did when I was a senior in high school, maybe even a little less than that. And there have been times when I've weighed 50, 60 pounds more than I do today. But today I believe that I'm at the correct weight. And every time that thought comes to me, well, maybe I should weigh a little bit less. Maybe if I weighed a few less pounds, it'd be easier for me to climb that hill on my bicycle. You know, those are thoughts that I'm not necessarily responsible for, but I have to observe. There's that old phrase, you know, I'm not responsible for the first thought, I am responsible for the second thought, I am responsible for the action I take out of that second thought. And so our program directly speaks to that. Unless your doctor directs you to the contrary, it's not absolutely necessary to add grains to your food plan immediately after your 30 days of abstinence. One of the things that I noticed when I was, I complained to Ray about early on in my program was that I was getting constipated. And I didn't know what to do about it. And so she suggested a particular type of cereal that has some flaxseed in it. And that helped me. So again, opinion, work it out with your sponsor. Also, the thing is, too, that when I started the program, I was chewing a lot of gum. So talk about going back to basics, chewing a lot of gum. And I chewed and chewed, and I would be riding my bicycle, and I'd chew the thing until all the sweetness out of it, and I'd put a pop in some more, and then I'd go home, and I'd drink the diet soda, and then I wondered why I was so gassy. You know, and so when in doubt, leave it out, maybe. So after a while, I noticed that I was chewing so much gum, you know, I was chewing like a pack or two of gum every day, that my jaw was getting sore. And then I complained to my sponsor, and they said, well, you can't chew gum anymore. But it's on the program. How come I can't chew my gum? When in doubt, leave it out. So, maybe a couple of years ago, I said, well, I don't think I have that problem anymore. It's chewing gum's allowed in the program. Why not have some chewing gum? And I had the same thing happen. My jaw started to ache from chewing so much, so leave it out. Another thing that happened to me early on in recovery, and since we're talking about basics, is I had a big pot belly when I first came to the program. With those 45, 50 pounds that I lost in the first few months in the program, my whole body was set out of whack. And so what I discovered was that I had this pain right across my upper back here. And my personal theory is that since my body was so thrown out of line, that I have these this ache and pain, and I've never heard that mentioned before in people sharing, but it is part of my story. And after about a year, it did go away, but it was, I couldn't figure out why I had this pain, and that's the idea that I came up with. And there's a lot of things that I'd like to share with you, but Pamela is going to be giving the talk on maintenance, which is on the next few pages of the book here. So it says about maintenance, you, your sponsor, and your health professional will determine when you have reached a healthy weight that you want to maintain as a way of life. Now, there is something in our program, and I don't know if you've seen it, but it's the sponsor checklist. So if we're talking about basics, there is that sheet that we get from World Service that gives you a checklist that allows you to go over the different things that you need to think about when you're sponsoring somebody. And it's also a good checklist for yourself to see how you're working your program. So I would recommend that sponsor checklist to you. Let's see. That's about pretty much what I have to say on this. I had a few less pages than the others to speak on. But I do want to say that when I weigh and measure my food and I start looking at that cup, and that cup is a little rounded instead of leveled off, I start thinking of myself, I say, when I take that extra food off that cup or off that tablespoon or off that scale, I feel I'm being obedient. I'm being obedient to my higher power. And that makes it more valuable to me. I don't know why, but that is abstinence. Abstinence is the greatest service to ourselves. And that abstinence, that obedience to what my higher power has in mind for me, is the way that I work my program. That's very basic for me. So thanks for letting me share that.
And David didn't think he was going to be funny. There's nothing more funny than constipation and gas, right? Great. So this is the question and answer section two. We have about 15 minutes.
Hi, this is Shannon. And thank you so much for talking about this wonderful topic that never gets old, as evidenced by all the people with maintenance in this room. And David, thank you for mentioning the sponsor checklist. And I just want to let everybody know that is available online if you go to our website, which is www.cehow.org. There's a tab called For CHOW Sponsors, and it's under there. It's also in our new Sponsoring in Compulsive Eaters Anonymous book, which is just now published and available. So we have two sources to get that. And I have a question for the panel. I'm so glad that you mentioned about adding grains, and that can be so anxiety-producing for people. And also, our book does say that it's optional. So can you maybe talk a little bit about how you added grain and how you help your sponsees when they change over to adding grains, and whether or not some have chosen not to? Just speak a little bit more about that.
Hi, I'm Gabby. I'm a compulsive eater. And I will tell you my own experience, which is on about day 29 and a half, I called my sponsor and I said, I can't do it. You know, I can't do it. I'm not going to lose any more weight. I don't think I've lost any weight already, and I don't think I'm going to lose any more weight on this. And my sponsor said, I hear you, which was a really, I mean, you know, we discount that phrase as being not powerful enough, but it's huge. I hear you. I hear what you're saying. So my own personal experience, and the one that I often walk my own sponsees through, is I say, let's try adding one. Let's try adding one. Maybe you still like your three vegetables at dinner, so let's give you a little bit more food at lunch. Or maybe you want to keep everything at lunch, but you'd like a grain at dinner. Why don't we try that for 30 days? And I promise you, if it's not working at the end of the 30 days, we'll revisit this issue, which you heard me say before, and I say that often. We'll revisit this. When I hit maintenance weight, by the way, I said to my sponsor, it's not enough. I'm not thin enough. She said, we'll revisit it in a year. if after the end of a year of weighing this much, you still don't think that you're thin enough, we can reopen this discussion. But live your life for an entire year at this weight and see if you still think that at the end of the year. Well, no, I didn't think that at the end of the year. Because, you know, I wanted to make it all about my weight. If I was just a little thinner, then my life would be perfect. Turns out that those two things are not actually, you know, correlation does not imply causation, and causation does not imply correlation. Doesn't necessarily go together. Just because they occur next to each other doesn't mean that they happen at the same time. So that was my own experience. I added one grain first, and then I added a second grain after 2 months and took away one of the vegetables. I will, however, let you know that I remember I started this program at 27, and I finished, you know, God willing, I'm never finished with this program, but I'm now 42. So I will let you know that in the course of my maintenance, my food has changed. I know we all think that we hit maintenance and that we get this food plan and it's written in stone and nothing ever changes, but it turns out that that's a complete lie. And you revisit it as needed, like when your weight starts to go up. So let me tell you that in maintenance, I have eaten things that are much more than I was eating when I was losing the weight. Then I went to the things that I was eating on the second 30-day plan, and I maintained my weight for a year or two while eating the second 30-day plan. And then I went to the first 30-day plan because I was still gaining weight. And then I went to less than the 30-day plan. I know nobody wants to hear that. For those of you who are listening to this not here live, I will tell you that I'm 5'1.5". Somehow I used to be 5'2.5", but that did not actually stay with me either. It was really funny. Last time I went to the doctor, he weighed me and measured my height, and I had no quarrel about my weight, but I talked to him for about 5 minutes about how his height chart was saying was wrong. And all I can tell you about my food plan is it is in fact possible to survive like Father Dowling on even less than the first 30 days. I'm perfectly clear evidence of that. So grains are not a necessity. They are very frightening. However, when I have a sponsee, especially if they're just getting down, I do encourage the grains because they're healthy. But, you know, as David kept saying, you got to make sure that they are kosher for program grains, as we say in my household. They're okay. They're on the food plan. You got to make sure that they're not some weirdo, you know, flour-based grain that you're sort of sneaking in there. Because those do create triggers. And those do, you know, or if you're sitting there craving them and having them, you know, whatever, if you're enjoying them, great. If you're craving them, not great. Not great. So, you know, I think that that's, again, between you and your sponsor or you and your sponsee, you know, add them within reason. But be aware that, you know, everything is subject to change.
Good morning. My name is Pamela. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi,
Pamela. You have to hold the
book. Thank you. And I just wanted to share with you. This is our first See How book. This one. Okay. This is our first See How book on sponsoring, and it does have, as was discussed, the sponsors checklist, as well as a lot of wonderful supplemental material for intergroups, for groups on sponsoring, as well as individual articles. So it's a great thing. And it's available at the literature table. We have a whole bunch of them. Also, as the basis of our program, Forever Abstinent, which we've been reviewing this morning, you can also get the current edition of Forever Abstinent at the literature table. And thank you all so much for this valuable workshop. And I thought it was sort of interesting that asking how many are on maintenance, and so many people here are on maintenance, and it shows that the basics are very important to ending up on maintenance and staying in maintenance. I wanted to say something about medical abstinence. Medical abstinence to me is sponsoring. A medical abstinence is no different from sponsoring anything else, because we have clear guidelines in here on what a medical abstinence is. And if my sponsee goes to the doctor and gets something in writing from the doctor based upon what is in this book, that the doctor understands the nature of addiction, which is in the book, and brings that to me, then we agree upon that, and then the sponsee follows that food plan just as the sponsee would follow any other food plan. So I don't think there's a big difference or a big mystery or anything magic about sponsoring someone in medical abstinence. Thanks.
Anyone else? Question? No? While she's signing, I did want to share one thing, too. I have been, I think some of you know, but since January, and it's a testament to this program and to this book, since January I haven't been able to exercise because of a bad back and other things. And because of what I do in this program, I haven't gained any weight. And in the past, I would have gained I don't know how many pounds. But because of my program in this book, I am the same weight. So here you go. What's your question?
My name is Sage. I'm a compulsive eater. David, I guess this is directed to you or maybe to anybody else who is working with vegetarians. Are there any other modifications that you make other than, like, if somebody is eating, is allergic to soy, is still vegetarian, but is also working, you know, the food program? Are there any things that you can share about your experience with that?
A very interesting question about the soy. You know, I had this reaction. You know, I ate a lot of beans. You know, so I eat a lot of legumes. Those is a primary source of protein for me, which is part of our food plan. When I was working, I would bring my beans, my legumes to work, and when I was at home, I would have a soy-based, a meat substitute. And I found that when I stopped working, when I retired, I started eating a lot more soy products, you know, soy nuts and all that sort of thing. And then I found that I was starting to develop female characteristics. I mean, my breasts started swelling and aching and hurting. And I had to go to the doctor, and they did mammograms on one breast and then the other breast. And there was some concern that it might be, you know, cancer or something like that. But it was just that I was eating too much soy. So today I try to make sure that I'm not eating too much soy-based products. There's setae, there's tempeh, there's, you know, there's tofurkey, all these different things. But I try not to eat too much of them. Basically, one of the reasons, too, is because there's so many extra ingredients that they throw in there. So, the garbanzo beans, the black-eyed peas, there's so many different legumes, and there's different ways of preparing them. One of the easiest ways for me as a vegetarian is to go usually to a Mexican restaurant because I can get the beans and the tortillas and the, you know, I don't want to go specifically into all the foods or cause you to binge on Mexican foods today, but the thing is for a vegetarian, that's what I have to do, and there's sometimes you have to stay away from the wheat or the soy or something, but our food plan has substitutes. You know, there's dairy. You know, I use a lot of dairy, the cheeses, the yogurt, the all those things that are the milk. You know, even the whipped cream sometimes. I know my sponsor uses whipped cream all the time. He sweetens it with, Splenda or whatever. But I wouldn't recommend that as a major source of protein. So anyway, sometimes it's when in doubt, leave it out, you know.
Should we take one more question? We'll take one more question. We're learning so much about David, constipation, gas, and breasts. Now we know he has... Wow. I didn't see that one coming. Well, maybe constipation and gas, but not breasts. There you go.
Hello. Hi, I'm Marari, and I'm a compulsive eater. I need both. Actually, I was interested in the breast thing.
I was just wondering if you could raise your hand if you're an available sponsor. So I there might be some people here who are looking for sponsors. So I'm a food inventory step maintenance sponsor, and I'm currently available. So I don't know if you guys would like to do that. Can you raise your hand? And so that way, if you're looking for a sponsor, we can connect you guys. So thank you.
That was good. Well, this was fun. We want to thank you for coming and helping us do this.